maybe it's an age thing where I, you know, I've just played so many games over the years and I got so many other things going on that, you know, I don't get that, you know, into it, but I love it when a game consumes me like this, where I become like a gaming nerd all over again, like I'm 15, just, that's all that matters. You know, my girlfriend, you know, she matters and my job matters and everything else matters, but right now I don't give a shit. I just want to play.
Yeah, exactly.
About video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 38, and we are recording this on Saturday, September 22nd, 2012. I'm your host, Steven, or as I'm known on the boards, Dr. Finkelstein. And with me today is my pal and co-host,
Joe, or as I'm known on the boards, Ninsage.
And it is just the two of us today. We're trying to record a shorter podcast today, partially in hopes of getting this out to you quicker. I know that, you know, our normal two-week rhythm has kind of died off this year a little bit. You know, things happen, but I want to get something out there, especially because last week, it's already been friggin' almost like 10 days, for God's sake, since Nintendo unveiled a bunch of information, and so I just wanted to go over that with Joe and with all you who might be interested in hearing what we have to say.
So just the two of us.
We can make it if we try.
Talking about Nintendo all the time. Anyway.
You and I. So, first up, we are going to do a Now Playing, and I am personally excited to talk about my games, however ineloquently that I will, but I'm in a good place in gaming right now, which is makes me happy. It's one of the best times of the year for me right now. But first, Joe, you tell me, what have you been playing?
All right, well, as you may remember from the last podcast, still been putting the finishing touches on Rhythm Thief. I did restart the game just to play through it again without sort of the anxiety of trying to get A rank, because, that's sort of, it's sort of the goal on your first playthrough. If you get A rank on every, rhythm game, then you unlock the final chapter. So, just been playing through it again, just purely for fun.
Quick question. Yep. If you get through the game without doing that, does it just stop you? And then is there an ending? But you, at that point, you can't go back and fix things?
Well, oh no, you can. Okay. When you play a game, one of the rhythm games, it goes sort of in your, like, list, and then you can go back literally at any time. You just go into the menu and then select it from the list, and so you can retry it.
So what you did is you just went back to play it as if you were going through the list, but you got the story back and everything.
Right. Okay. The way that the last chapters work is, again, it's sort of like once you've done the prerequisite task, they just sort of unlock in the menu, and you just access them from that menu.
Right.
And they're really, I mean, they're very short. It's like you get a little bit of plot and then probably like one more rhythm game and a little bit more plot, and that's pretty much it. So If you didn't do any of the, there's three extra chapters. If you didn't do any of them, it's not like you'd be missing anything. I mean, the meat of the story does play out through the regular course of the game. So
I will say, after you talked about it on the last podcast, I did download the demo.
Oh yeah. What did you think of that?
I mean, it was entertaining enough, but I had also downloaded the demo for Theater Rhythm. Mm-hmm. If that's Theater Rhythm, I don't know.
Oh no.
And that has something to do with what I'll say later about what I'm playing now. But Rhythm Thief, it was fun for a demo, but it didn't engage me enough to pursue it further.
Well, and you know, I was really dead set on getting the game well before the demo came out, and I played the demo, and the demo was really lackluster, in my opinion. It doesn't capture the charm of the game as a whole.
Well, is it almost because it's out of context in a way?
Right. Like, the Layton games, I think, are much more than just a sum of their puzzles, right?
Right.
So, and I think the same thing applies to Rhythm Thief. Plus, even the rhythm games that were in Rhythm Thief, I guess also in the demo, I guess also because of the lack of context, it's just, you don't get, how can I put it? Like, there doesn't seem to be like a consistency because it's four different types, right? They're four completely unrelated types. And while it is good that the game has that kind of variety, you throughout the game will do the same type, you know, two or three times, let's say. And so you sort of, you know, you're able to sort of get in the mode, and it's a little less jarring than the demo where you're just jumping straight from one to the other. So
yeah, I mean, I remember like fighting off guys who were like bouncing towards me.
Yep.
And then
yep.
There was also the museum one I had seen in the trailer, where mm-hmm. like conveniently all this museum has are plants are shaped like poses. And then there was like I think one where they were just dancing, just you know, for fun. And then I don't remember the fourth one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, they do never explain the other two random guys that dance with Raphael during those scenes.
You know, sometimes I think it just happens.
Yeah.
You know, you have you life. Know,
you see someone dancing and other people join in. I mean, that's ideal.
That's how it should be.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I recommend to everyone, just, you know, wait till it's $5 or something and then just go buy the freaking game.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely don't want to talk bad about it. It's not like I was turned off by the game. Okay. I definitely just wouldn't see myself paying full price for it. But I know that I'm not that... Like, I like the Layton games too, but I'm not that engrossed by, like, the style, which Rhythm Thief definitely borrows from.
Oh, yeah.
So it is kind of cool. If you like the Layton style and you like rhythm gameplay, it is a really nice mix.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would recommend almost watching some videos and then buying it instead of playing the demo, because the demo does take it out of context.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I'm not sure I've played a demo yet that I feel like I get a good chunk of the game. Have you? I don't know. I feel like every demo that I've played where I actually go play the full game later, it's like, man, that demo was totally useless.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I hear about Monster Hunter. Played the demo, thought it was really shitty, and then just left it out of my brain, you know? But then there's, like, been a billion threads in the boards that have had, like, billions of replies, and everyone's all going crazy. The world's crazy for Monster Hunter, and I just don't get it.
I'm sure I've shared this on the podcast before, but yeah, when I played the Monster Hunter demo, I was like, wow, this is literally the worst game I've ever played, and I don't ever want to touch this again. And 500 hours later,
well, I mean,
I thoroughly enjoyed the game.
You know, getting your ass kicked does not a good demo make.
No.
You know? And that's all that is, because you're so underleveled, and
yeah.
And I mean, the only cool thing I got from that was like the vast locales. But Xenoblade gets me that fix.
Yep, definitely.
And I didn't get turned off by some sort of Xenoblade demo, which I might have even. Because Xenoblade's gameplay wasn't something that I was traditionally akin to, but I bought it because it just looked beautiful and the videos and the reviews were great. And I was like, you know what? You know, sometimes my tastes aren't what I assume they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's safe to broaden. And so it was a $50 gamble, but it really paid off that I haven't completed yet, but I absolutely plan to.
Yeah, it's a long game. Speaking of Operation Rainfall games, the other game I've been playing lately is The Last Story. And I think, you know, that's a game that compared to Xenoblade is certainly a much shorter, tighter experience. I did clock in at about 28 hours to play through it once. And I've already started my second playthrough. That's how much I am enjoying it.
From what I've heard with Xenoblade, people get tired of their game through at about 28 hours.
Yeah.
I've had my, you know, stop gaps as well, but I've pushed through them and I'm at another one now. So it's nice that maybe The Last Story doesn't have that.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's tough to exactly evaluate this game. I'll say, you know, one of the best feelings I've gotten from this game, which might not even make a whole lot of sense, but I feel like I'm playing Final Fantasy I if it had been made in 2011. Like I feel like I'm playing like an RPG that is simple, relatively simple in its approach, and just like earnest, I guess could be the right word. Like
not overly ambitious, but yeah, in a good way.
Exactly. Like I feel like basically, you know, if you look at the Square Enix Final Fantasy games of the last decade, and if you try to think of those as like the standard of JRPGs, you know, they definitely adopted a model of like, well, you know, how are we going to outdo ourselves? Well, it's got to be more over the top, more insane, more crazy, you know? And The Last Story is a game that I think is just so secure enough in what it can offer that it doesn't need to try to go that route.
Right. So it knows what it does well, and that's what it does. It doesn't try to do other things just to, you know, pad value or something.
Right. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just been so enjoyable. And as everyone knows, I mean, I'm all about plot in games, and this game, by its title alone, indicates that there's a strong emphasis on the story.
But no sequels.
Oh, I know. Yeah, well.
Then again, the Final Fantasy had a lot of sequels and wasn't really quite final, so. That'd be great if, like, you know, 2 decades from now, it's like, The Last Story 7.
The Last. You know, I, again, without spoiling anything, the way it ends, it certainly wouldn't be a huge stretch to make a sequel if they wanted, but they probably don't. But yeah, it's, you know, it's supposed to be this love story, and I'm not sure that you really, you know, care that much about whether or not these two end up together. First of all, I mean, it's a video game. They're probably going to end up together. But really, it's everything that happens around that that's so endearing. It's all the other characters. Though I do kind of hate Sarin. Anyway, she's this character. She's like an open alcoholic. Like, I've never seen a game outside of, you know, like a Grand Theft Auto or something where someone was just like, this person has a drinking problem, and it's a little bit sad.
Did you ever read the Hunger Games novels?
No.
Oh, there's a character called Haymitch in that series that I wonder if she's kind of like him. And he was kind of a funny character. I mean, well, not kind of. He was a very dramatic character, but he also was used for comic relief quite a bit, especially in the movie from last year or so. Is she used comically, or is she just pathetic?
I think she's supposed to be funny. Yeah.
That's the worst kind of funny, when you're supposed to be, because you're not. Probably.
Well, I don't know. You know, I bet that for a lot of people, it would be humorous. It's just for me, that joke gets a little old. The fact that every scene that she's in ends with, so let's all go have a pint or something. It's like, all right. But yeah, everything else, I don't know. It's really a joy. As some people on the boards have said, it's like there's this whole dress-up simulator aspect of the game where you can, you know, change the colors of like all your gear and everything. And so I've totally given every character like their own motif and stuff.
So
it's a little
Power Rangers.
Yeah, pretty much. As I was thinking about it, I basically was creating the Power Rangers, but I'm all about it. I think they look awesome now, so I'm really, really psyched about that. And yeah, it's just a well-made game. The voice acting is really, really good, and I hope that Mistwalker, I hope that they give us something like this again in the future. If it was a sequel, I would be really psyched, but just something in the same vein. Just, you know, again, a JRPG that doesn't just try to go insane with itself. I mean, I love the fact that basically you're saving. I mean, I guess it kind of comes down to the fate of the world, but it's a story between basically these two cities. And that's the kind of thing that I've always felt, you know, why is it every game has to have this global, if not universal, scope of danger. You know what I mean? Like, it's always like, it'll always start off as this ragtag band of mercenaries or something. But then by the end of the game, it's like it's like this interstellar dimensional rift, blah, blah, blah.
Well, like, I mean, you know, if you look in history of storytelling, those grand, you know, world ending type scenarios are typically make for good fiction. But I think, what troubles some games and some stories is that, like, it doesn't fit within their own context of reality. Like, I'm thinking of Star Wars right now. To me, Star Wars seems plausible within their own world, like the original Star Wars. And actually, that's where, like, the first, well, the episodes one through three, the second trilogy, don't really fit in as well with me, because things kind of just be, what kind of English was that just now? they just seem out of their own realm of legitimacy. Okay. So I think that while not to crap on the type of, you know, of stories where, you know, the world's going to end or something like that, I think you're right, though. There's a lot to be said about just, you know, living in a community or living in a world, not trying to save the whole thing, but saving your country or saving your town, even, you know.
Which, right.
I mean, I never played Earthbound for more than a few minutes, but have you played that game?
No.
Like, I'm probably wrong, so I probably should just shut up. But I mean, you don't travel the whole world, as far as I understand it, in that game. You travel within that city and that the outlying regions and everything, and maybe you do save the world by staying in there, but like, you don't have to travel to all these, you know, different continents and stuff,
right?
Or the threat can be in your neighborhood, in your backyard. It doesn't have to be like the Independence Day, where there's just a fleet around the Earth. And
definitely, yeah. And really, it's like you said with Star Wars, in that universe, as long as it makes sense and feels right, then it works. But I just feel like a lot of times, you know, the developers, they'll have an idea for a game and for a game's plot, but then, you know, I don't know if it's during a board meeting or something, but someone says, you know, oh, this, you know, this is not grandiose enough. This is, no one's going to care about just this one city. They've got to save the whole universe.
And, right.
You
right.
know. So, and anyway.
And yet they don't change the scale of, like, of the game or just right. the story to fit with the context that they've just created right. now.
Right. Because ultimately it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that a ragtag group of mercenaries is saving the whole universe. And I guess maybe they feel that that's the every man becomes the hero kind of appeal, but we've done that before.
Yeah, but I mean, in my book, you know, you could be a hero in a lot of different ways. And, you know, saving one girl can be, you know, heroic and, you know, for me, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Especially growing up, you know, with movies and really being more of a romantic, mentality, you know, like, you know, I don't care about, like in the Mario movie, you know, there's all these random girls who are captured, you know?
Okay.
You can only give a shit about Daisy, and that's all you need, you know? Like, if they had expanded on that, it would have not added to it, you know what I mean? And in fact, they almost ignore the fact, like they mentioned in the beginning of the movie, saying, oh, women have been disappearing because they're trying to find Daisy or whatever.
Okay.
And then later, like, there's this one scene where they're in some sort of cold storage where they're keeping these women and everything, and then there's a grand escape. And there's just a bunch of, like slutty looking women, I think. I forget. I mean, because I think they'd been picking up, like, hookers or something like that.
Okay.
Or maybe not.
Sounds good.
Maybe that's just my memory. But I think I just called all the women in that movie hookers. But yeah. So no, anyway, I know what you're saying. I'm derailing our thoughts here.
No problem. So the last thing I'll say about it is the battle system. When I first started playing the game, man, I was lost. I was confused. And the thing is, the game even has these tutorials, and they're integrated possibly better than I've seen any other game, where it's like you're presented with something new and a little, you know, tutorial thing flashes up, and it'll just show you like a little video of what you're supposed to do, and it's got like sort of these little hand-drawn animations with the text explaining it. Anyway, it's really well done, but for some reason it was like by the time battle started, it's like, you know, cause you only control your one main guy, but you're on a team of up to like six or seven people at a time. And it's just like the battle begins and they all just launch into their sort of pre-programmed battle, strategies. And you've got all these different, enemy types and they'll start attacking in different ways. And it's just, when you first play the game, or when I first played the game, I was just like, what is going on? Like, it was just information overload, and I couldn't quite figure out what I was supposed to do, what my responsibilities were supposed to be. But after not very long, after a couple hours, I eventually figured it out, and it really becomes not so overwhelming, and it really makes perfect sense after a little while, and then you start being able to you know, really efficiently command your team and everything like that, and it becomes really fun.
Mm-hmm. So then I guess final thoughts, you know, you've completed it, you're a new game plus.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just very satisfied with your purchase.
Yeah, I will say, you know, I think it'll be difficult for anyone to historically separate, you know, this game and Xenoblade and Pandora's Tower if anyone ever gets to play it, but I will say that my final thoughts are Xenoblade was a more impressive game, yet The Last Story somehow was a more enjoyable game. Those are, because I put a lot of thought into it. If I had to try to boil those two games down into one word, that's somehow how it played out. Because, yeah, I mean, Xenoblade, we've talked before about just the scope and the, you know, of what happens in the game world and how impressive that is. And of course, the fact that it's like a 100-hour game. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I just want to have a disclaimer. You shouldn't boil your games, any games. to everyone out there, don't start that. It won't make them better. It won't make them
That's a good PSA. Worse.
Yeah. Don't boil your games. Although, well, the last question I have to, in our whole podcast today, maybe you might want to boil those games, but we'll get to that later.
So what about you? What have you been playing?
Okay, so I don't remember exactly the timetable of when I got these. Well, okay. First of all, I'll talk about Theater Rhythm. I think this was, 2 weekends ago. No, it might have even been last weekend. I don't recall. But I went to go see The Campaign, which is that Will Ferrell movie.
And, oh, okay.
With Zach Galifianakis. And so
any good? By the way?
Yeah, it was... I had a free ticket, so I went there. So I definitely don't regret my time. But, you know, I wouldn't have paid full price for it. It was just a... You know, your standard comedy or whatever. If you like those actors. It's more of an actor comedy, you know?
Sure.
But that was the same day that I had woken up, and I grabbed my 3DS, and I laid in bed for a while, and I downloaded the demos for Rhythm Thief. And, you know, so maybe this was the 9th, I think. Because it was the day after we recorded the last podcast. So I tried those demos, and I tried Theater Rhythm second, and I've never really been into Final Fantasy. I've always wanted to be, but I just never had Sony systems as a dedicated Nintendo guy, and, you know, they were fun to look at, and I watched my cousin play Final Fantasy X some years ago, and that was fun, but yeah, I just never, you know, had an opportunity to play them. But the one thing I can always appreciate and always have is the music. And I love video game music in general. It's one of my favorite things about video games at all. And so I can listen to Final Fantasy music without having any context and still really enjoy it, if it's good, I guess. But so I bought this game on a whim because I had gone to the it's like an outdoor mall where the movie is, and I just walked into GameStop, and I was like, you know, I'll get a street pass maybe, and I'll just ask them, you know, how much it costs if they have it. And they're like, yeah, we got it for $40. I was like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to do it, you know? I had posted in a thread like 15 minutes before asking if anyone would recommend it, and only Zero had done it. He had never played it, but I thought he did. So I was like, ah, Zero says it's good, you know, I'll just go for it. And then I get out of the movie, because I didn't even get to play it until I got home. And I get out of the movie, and Zero's like, oh, I never played it. He just thought it would be good.
Okay.
It turns out I've actually really enjoyed it. The gameplay is more like Guitar Hero, but tapping on the screen and or holding or swiping, and you're playing to various music from all these games from Final Fantasy 1 through 13. And you got these kind of it's an RPG with rhythm in it. So it's not just tapping, but like every time you successfully complete a song, you get experience points, which boosts your magic, your physical attack stats. And I'll be honest, I don't know what the hell that does.
Okay.
Because, I mean, my characters have grown and grown and grown. I've chosen my party of four out of, like, 13 initial choices. And I don't know if it does anything. I think what it actually is doing is... Okay, so, you, like, there's three different types of rhythm games, by the way. There's one where it's like Guitar Hero, where the, you have four lanes, and then they all are shooting at you different things, and you have to tap it. It doesn't matter where... You don't have to tap on it. You just have to tap or swipe or whatever. So... It's pretty easy to get into, maybe a little bit harder to master. Just depends on how good you are at, like, having, like, looking in one spot on the screen, but having your eyes read what's coming.
Sure.
It's an interesting trait for, rhythm gamers, but, so there's that one, and then that's the battle mode, and then there's, each game has three songs as well. So there's, your battle song from the game, then there's a travel song, where you're just kind of walking along. And those, you have one lane, and you have to tap or do whatever. But when you hold, instead of holding and then you just let go, you actually have to slide up and down on the screen to like kind of go along with a wave.
Okay.
And of course, so that makes it a little trickier. But your character this whole time is behind the screen walking and coming across people and like Mogs, I think, or Moogs, those little white dudes.
Mm-hmm. Moogles.
Moogles, yeah. So, you know, once in a while you'll come across one of those. And then every song has a little special yellow section, and if you nail that, or if you nail the feature section before it, then you turn into a chocobo, and you start running. And so what I think's happening is the better you play and the better your stats, the farther in those sections you'll go, so the greater items you might end up seeing. And then in the battle mode, the stronger your stats, the more enemies you'll fight over the course of that same song. Thus, you'll get maybe better weapons later, that kind of thing, or better items.
Okay.
So... Because I'll notice, like, if I replay a song, you know, after I've leveled up a bit, I can get past, like, more enemies. Because every time you do, like, an attack or a rhythm button, so say you tap or say you swipe, that's sending an attack to the enemy as if it was an RPG.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully I've made that clear. Then the third kind of rhythm is where the little marker kind of goes around the screen like a ribbon dancer or something, just kind of floats around. And then icons will appear and disappear. And so you kind of got to follow it. Those are usually slower songs, more like emotionally impactful songs. In fact, Selyse's Opera, or I don't know if that's how you pronounce her name, but I've never played Final Fantasy VI yet, so God forbid. But I remember always loving that song back when, like, I had a PC, my first PC, and I had MIDIs. Like, when that's what video game music was a MIDI file that somebody would send you.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I love that that song, though, always. It was, like, the first video game song I loved that wasn't Nintendo. And so it was cool to see that back. So it's a big collection of these songs and different ways to do it. And you have your basic level, and then you can do the expert level, and then after that's the ultimate. And... it's just, I mean, if you like Guitar Hero type stuff, but it changes it up, I think it's even more fun than Guitar Hero. And if you like Final Fantasy music at all, or just video game music, it's really worth it. There's a lot of downloadable content as well, which I haven't tapped into, but each song's worth 99 cents. And that's my only gripe about the game so far, is that you can't preview songs, from what I understand. So I have to go to like YouTube one day and just look at a big list and be like, oh, this is a good song. I'll play that. Because I'm not going to spend all this money on songs I may hate, you know? And they released three or four songs.
How many DLC songs are there total?
I don't know when they started doing it, but from, like, the press releases that that have shown up on the boards and stuff like that every week, it's like three or four songs. So it's definitely a big library.
Mm.
And the game's been out for over a month. Maybe a month. I think I bought it, like, maybe 3 or 4 weeks after it came out. So, the game itself has, you know, technically it's 5 songs per game, but the bookends of it, the first and last song, are kind of like just tapping to a beat, and you can't win or lose it. It just gives you extra points if you succeed.
So is that like the equivalent of what would be level grinding in a normal RPG then?
No, because you actually don't get experience for your characters through that. You get And every single song, including the bookends, you get these, I forget what they're called. They're just little points or whatever that you get for completing everything. And they constantly add up. And every time you hit, like, every 500 points, you, like, get a new shard. And 8 shards will unlock a character or this and that. So it's a general, like, scorekeeping thing.
Hmm.
But it was, you know, $40, and it was actually a damn good $40. I'm enjoying it, and the only reason I haven't played more of it is I haven't even gotten through all the games yet, all 13 sets. And that's because, like, it's not the kind of game you can just play while watching TV or doing something else, like, which I tend to do. I can't even be talking to my girlfriend while I'm doing it because you gotta focus on the music.
Gotta concentrate.
And so lately at work, I've been, like, eating lunch and then spending the last 5 minutes just playing a song or two.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just so I can fit in some time. But yeah, so I don't know if you have any questions for me about that game, but.
It looks like from the screenshots I've seen that, like, you'll have characters from all the different games on your screen at the same time, right?
Yeah, up to 4. That's your
party. So you could be traversing through, like, an area in, say, Final Fantasy IV. But have characters from Final Fantasy 12.
Well, yeah, and I mean, again, I don't have much of a experience on what these locales look like, but I think the backgrounds are generic, kind of. Final Fantasy inspired, but not based on any particular game, because they kind of look the same throughout each one. But yeah, your team, they only, I think, have one character, or the heroes of each game, unlockable at the start. So you do have a mix of everything.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I was seeing, like, you know, New Game Plus or something where you can just mix and match, or if that was how the whole game was done. What about, like, let's say you are someone who just, you know, hates Final Fantasy IX, let's say, and the music from that game. Are you able to, like, pick and choose which levels you want to play, or do you have to do them all in a certain order, or
it lets you do whatever you'd like, really.
Okay.
Now you won't complete anything, you know, the whole game if you don't play them. But I mean, you could definitely play them just once and be done with it.
Okay.
Like right now, I'm at the menu for the series mode, and yeah, I can sift through Final Fantasy 1 through 13. It gives you the years and just kind of shows you things, your overall score. But yeah, like I haven't done 10, 11, 12, or 13, but I can definitely try to right now.
Okay, and if, like, how, like I was saying before with Rhythm Thief, like, to complete it, it's getting an A rank. So what is, like, completing the...
Right, well, there's S rank, then A rank, then B, C, etc. And if you get an A rank or higher, it'll allow you to do an expert, or, like, the next level up. And, but that's really it. I mean, even if you got, you know, C, it would still let you go on to the next one.
Sure.
Because, again, you can do that, but you just can't unlock harder levels of those songs without getting better scores. What's kind of amusing is because of the choice of S, I definitely got an ass ranking for my 3 songs. So, you know, an ASS, but...
that will happen.
And that almost inspires me not to try to better that first song just for that fact. But yeah, so it doesn't really force you into any sort of thing. It just kind of lets you freely do what you want, which is kind of nice, especially for someone who isn't that into Final Fantasy as I could be. I'm not locked into doing stuff that I don't want to do. I can just really have... The fun I have in this game is up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And real quick, my team right now is Terra, and it doesn't say who these people are from, so I don't quite remember, but Terra's from one of the games. 6?
Yeah, okay. Pretty sure.
So she's my leader, and then I got Cloud. He's from 7, I know that. Lightning, I think, is from 9.
Lightning? That's from 13, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought she had cool hair and a cool name. And then Fearon? Fearon?
What?
I don't know who the hell.
I'm gonna guess 12 because I don't really know that game.
You know what? It'll let me see right now. So, actually, he's from Final Fantasy 2.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and then, I played that one.
And Lightning is from 13. You're right. Cloud's from 7, and Final Fantasy VI is Terra, yes. Alright. And so, yeah, so you have a character from each of the 13 games, and then there's, according to this right now, 4 unlockables that I'm working on, but there could be more.
Okay.
One of them looks to be one of those Black Mage characters, or whatever. But yeah, and you can equip items and stuff like that, and you do learn abilities, but I haven't used them, or any items or abilities, because I don't quite know how.
Okay.
And I thought I read in here that, like, you'll earn less points if you use equipment and stuff.
Okay.
So it's like, I just want to get the maximum bang for my buck, you know?
Do you happen to know if there's any characters from Final Fantasy XI in there? Because I know that that was like an MMO. But
yeah, they're,
I have to assume there were some, you know, named predetermined characters in that game. But I never played it.
The Final Fantasy XI guy is known as Shantotto, or...
Okay.
I don't know.
Sounds like a name.
yeah. So, oh, I don't know. They definitely represent each game, though.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I've been playing that when I can, but the thing that's really been consuming me, and I use up so much time talking about that game that I'm regrettable, but Bioshock.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've been mentioning on, like, many podcasts about how, I need to get to Bioshock, or I hear Bioshock's really good. I have it, you know. I got both for such a great deal. Bioshock is awesome.
Okay.
Seriously, it is a great game that I should have played years ago. I've had a 360 for like 2-3 years, and I don't really have any games for it. I have Left 4 Dead 2, DJ Hero, You Don't Know Jack, and then these Bioshock games. And
it's quite a collection.
I know. But Bioshock is, I have a lot of downloadable games and stuff too. That's what I was primarily using it for, like Perfect Dark and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But Bioshock is an awesome first-person shooter puzzle-solving experience. It's not as dramatic puzzle-solving as, like, Metroid, but, and it's actually not that much of a shooter. I mean, there's a lot of shooting, that's how you attack, but it's not, like, swarms and swarms of enemies, you know? But mm-hmm. It is, for anyone who's late to the party like I am, you know, you're this character who gets in a plane crash and he ends up underwater and he ends up finding this sea level city, and say that 3 times fast. and it's this place called Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And this crazy lunatic Andrew Ryan created it, and he likes to have all sorts of experiments done on children and people, like genetic experiments, and it's a whole clusterfuck down there. It's a horrible place, but it's fascinating at the same time, and it kind of has like a 50s theme to it, like
right,
some music,
right.
Which is really haunting. Like, when you're just kind of going in this dark, dank corridor, and then suddenly, like, there's a little record player going on with, like, how much is that doggy in the wind? That's it's fucked up, man. But it's awesome. It's so good. I'm so engrossed. I mean, I find myself often, like, my head, like, tilted up and my mouth dropped as I'm playing.
Okay.
I'm just, like, trying to be so perceptive and, like, is there a splicer around the corner or whatever? Who, you know, what is this? What am I hearing? And that's another game that I can't really play while doing anything else because I'm so focused on listening for cues.
Mm-hmm.
Because characters will just run it. Like, you'll turn a corner and there'll be no one there, but you'll hear someone just, like, complaining about Andrew Ryan, you know?
Sure.
Because these guys are all lunatics, more or less. There's only, like, a few good characters in this game who aren't just psychopaths. And there's a lot of blood. There's a lot of corpses. For a long time, I was very cautious. I would shoot a corpse before I'd approach it, you know?
Sure.
And that was a waste of time until where I'm at now in the game, which is kind of getting near the end. And yeah, corpses will jump at you because these people are faking it. And actually, the Houdini splicer was the first... The Houdini splicer. the Houdini splicer is this character... the splicers in general are like your basic enemy. You've got, like, okay. You know, the lead heads who have guns. You have... nitros who throw, like, Molotov cocktails at you and stuff. And then you've got the Houdini ones who can literally teleport around. Those are creepy. When you first experience those, I was in this, like, basement, this wet basement, and this guy's, like, running across, like, help me! You know, like, he's almost, like, you know, I thought I actually had to help him. And mm-hmm. I'm looking for him, and suddenly he just warps behind me and starts attacking the crap out of me like a jerk. And, I got his ass good. And I was just even more engrossed at that point. It's just so, so good. The gameplay is really cool because you not only have your regular weapons, but you have plasmids, which are more or less like special telekinesis powers or
incinerate. It's like magic or something.
Yeah.
Right.
That's more it is. Okay. Yeah. He just changes your genetic code to manipulate physics. So there's a telekinesis one. There's fire. There's freezing. All sorts of cool powers. Have you heard of the Big Daddies?
Yes.
Okay. Because like one of the things that's in this game is there's these Big Daddies, which are these really tank enemies who protect these little sisters, these little girls, and these girls are part of the experiment that Andrew Ryan was doing. And your goal to not only get to the levels is to also, when you can, rescue or harvest these little girls because there's something called Adam. And that's the life force of the special genetic powers. And you can either, and you want to collect Adam because it gives you more powers. It allows you to do stuff. You can either harvest these girls, which I haven't even seen yet because I choose to rescue them. And you get like all the Adam out of their bodies and then they die. Or you can rescue them, which takes some of it, but allows them to live normal lives again. They turn into normal girls again and they run away.
Okay.
And it seems like a random mechanic, but actually it does play into the plot more than you'd expect. And I just discovered that this morning when I was playing. But it's a really engrossing story. It's very simple in its story, but it's very, very engrossing. Couple of plot twists, going on. I wasn't that shocked by the ones I've seen, but either way, I don't really care. The story isn't like everything. It is important and it's still fun to go through,
Mm-hmm.
But man, I'm loving every second of this game.
Yeah, that's I definitely BioShock, and I guess BioShock 2 as well. Although I've heard that it's different than the first one, and not necessarily in a great way. But I guess it's still an extremely good game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as good, but still.
I'll let
you
know on the next podcast. I'll probably start it by then.
But yeah, I've always, as someone who only had a Wii this generation, just typically there's not very many games that aren't available on the Wii that I really, really would like to play, but BioShock has always been one of them. And I think it's, I watched a friend play the first one for a little bit, and I think what impressed me the most is that you cannot at all say that this is one of those first-person shooters that is just brown and gray and drab.
Right.
And everything. Like, the world, I guess the underwater setting helps, but it just was so colorful and vibrant. I mean, it's also depressing, right?
Oh,
it's dark in the tone sense, but it actually uses the entire range of color to convey that, as opposed to just being visually drab to convey the depressing atmosphere.
No, it's true. There's a section that's kind of not a forest level. I mean, it's not divided that distinctly, but there definitely is a garden or like a botanical garden area that, has a lot more. I know greens and browns are the traditional joke colors for these first-person shooters, but it is a bit more lively and vibrant. And then there's, neon signs everywhere.
Right.
Because it is a downtown district in this one section where they have, bars and a strip joint. And you see money on the stage, but there's also a dead person in a chair. You see, people slutting it up, And,
mm-hmm.
I think what makes it so fun is, besides the gameplay being great, and the atmosphere, though, is what really makes it. Because you have these people who are murmuring psychopathic things. Mm-hmm. Or you have this music, this tone, you have the style of the chairs, the style of the enemies, because like the Big Daddies are pretty much in giant nautical suits.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was this one time I was in a room and well, this too, like you were saying, the underground setting or the underwater setting. When you look out a window in Rapture, you don't see sky, you don't see city below, you see water.
Mm-hmm.
And it constantly reminds you that you are under the sea, and it really makes you feel like you are. Like they don't they don't just say, like, in the opening cinematic, oh, look, you're going under the water. Now that's where you are. It is right. So filled with water. You'll see water squirting out of a window, like a small little hole, and you're thinking, like, oh, that's probably not that good. Like, there's a real sense of urgency with your character and what you want to do, and the overall just feel of the game, the atmosphere is just impeccable, and that's right. The main reason I can't wait to go back into 2, even if it is similar. Like, I don't know if 2 is going to take place in Rapture. I'm guessing it does based on, like, the box art that I've seen. Mm-hmm. I know that the third one won't, because the third one, I don't know if you've seen BioShock Infinite, like the trailer.
Sure. Yep.
That apparently takes place in the sky. And now that I have more context for this game, I want to check it out. But
I am curious. I mean, this world. I know you said it's like you crash land or mm-hmm. something. Somehow you're thrust into the world of Rapture, but does, like, the rest of humanity, like, live on the surface like normal, or is it?
I assume so.
Okay.
I think so, but you never even think about it.
Okay.
It really feels like you are just the last man on Earth because you're just trapped in this hell. Like, right. I haven't even considered, like, you know, how big is Rapture? If it's in the Atlantic Ocean, then
right.
how much space is it taking up? Like,
because at one time, this city was above water, right? And
no,
totally functional? No,
it was actually always built underwater. Because the creator, Andrew Ryan, wanted to get away from government.
Okay.
But he had people who were willingly living there. Everyone was, like, it was like, did you ever see the show Eureka?
Mm-mm.
That was a show, like, where, like, a bunch of scientists all sit in a city and they do crazy, kooky things. It was a fun sci-fi comedy. But,
I've seen Eureka's castle. Is it like that at all?
Nothing at all.
Okay.
But a great reference to Nickelodeon.
All right. Yeah.
But so similarly to that, it's like this community just thrust away from the world, scientists doing experiments and living happily, but then corruption started and people got greedy and,
So it was an attempt at utopia, right?
Yeah, it was Andrew Ryan's attempt at utopia, and yeah. it got real messed up real quick.
Everything goes tragic.
Over the course of, like, I think 12 years of decline, and then that's where you are now. Like, it's not even clear about what time. It could be, the year 2000 up there.
Mm.
But down here, it's the year 1950, because everything's kind of themed, and that's what Andrew Ryan wants. And the technology's not, like, so crazy that it would be, like, way later in the future, but it's also not technology you would have seen necessarily in the 50s, so
mm-hmm.
But yeah, so just amazing game. I'm having so much fun. I'm so addicted to it. I go to work excited to come home and play, which hasn't happened with me in a game in a while.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a good feeling, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't feel like a chore ever. Like I just, I want to get to the next checkpoint just because I want to see what's next. And now, to tie this into Nintendo really quick, and then we'll go into our main topics, which this was a really long now playing segment for us. But the third one hasn't come out yet. It's supposed to come out in, like, February, I think, is the latest date for that. And hopefully it does come out on the Wii U, which I know wouldn't make that much sense in the aspect of the first two weren't anywhere near a Nintendo console. But, these games are... Nintendo's starting to attract the hardcore from a... publisher standpoint, but just, like, from third-party support,
mm-hmm.
And that's been real apparent based on the list of games that we've seen for the launch window. So I'm hoping that this comes out for the Nintendo platform and soon, like, not, like, a year after the initial release, but either way, I'll probably want to buy it on launch, just because, it's like one of those things, I waited years for the first two, but why should I wait more years for the third,
Sure.
So I don't know. I would like to buy it on Nintendo's console, but I will definitely support Microsoft this time for that. They don't get a lot of my money just because I'd rather spend it on Nintendo games, but
sure.
Absolutely.
Are there ways that you're seeing that the gamepad would really lend itself to this title?
Well, okay. So if you're going to use dual analog, which actually I finally got used to again after not doing it for many years. you know, you'd be able to translate that over, and then, yeah, it would, well, to change your weapons and stuff, you just hold down the R trigger, and then you use the joystick. I like that because it allows me to pause the game for a split second so I can think about what weapon I want to use. I'm not getting pummeled by something while I'm trying to make a decision.
Sure.
I appreciate that, you know. If it was going to be on the gamepad, I figured they would probably have, like, your plasmids list and your all your different, like, attributes on there for you to tap on, which might be just as quick if they're big enough icons, but I don't want to, like, fish around for something on, you know,
sure.
and have it not pause. Like, that could be a detriment to the game. But, you know, there is a lot of taking pictures in this game, and you do research on enemies at some points, and there's actually one psychopath who requires you to take pictures of his dead, not friends, but people he wants dead.
Okay.
So you have to kill them, take pictures, and then he'll let you into this place.
Nice.
And it's just so messed up. I love...
So it's like Bioshock Snap.
Yeah. And that could be really useful with the screen, you know, holding it up or something like that. There's a few moments in the game where there's apparitions that show up, and they tell a little bit of a story. I think it might be my character getting some memories of something.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I guess that would imply, too, that he was down there before this. I'm not really sure. I'm still trying to unravel that. But, you know, maybe, you know, you put up the screen and then you see the apparitions. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't... I'm not as creative as hopefully developers
will be in
the future. But.
Do you have a sense of how much of the game you're through at this point?
Well, okay. I looked up how many, like, levels, quote-unquote, or how many areas there were when I first started the game. So I saw... Well, plus there's a... like an elevator list of eventually. And there's still some open slots, but it feels like I'm getting near the end of the game.
Okay.
A major plot twist occurred, and I figure that's I feel like I'm now heading right towards the final,
right.
you know, antagonistic battle that I have to do.
Gotcha.
I won't say, you know, what that will entail, you know, who else that might entail, but I feel like I'm going there. I feel like, but I mean, there could be another twist, you know, for all I know, or a change in direction, but I don't think I'm in the last level, though, because if you choose to save the little sisters, every three, you'll get, like, some bonus Adam and some bonus gifts, and then that actually is why it's better to save them, because you get a little bit extra by the end of the game. You just don't get as much of an initial return, and which for me has been fine, because I am playing on, like, one of the easier settings, if not the easiest, which, whatever. I'm having fun. I'm not getting frustrated, so that's a win for me.
Yep.
But, so I haven't necessarily needed, you know, to, like, suit myself up right away. But anyway, so there's every three you get it, and in this level right now, I just got one, and I got all the little sisters in that level, but yet there's, now I just have one of three, so I figured there's gotta be an even amount, you know, divisible by three.
Yep.
So, there's got to be at least two more. So that with two to three in a level, there's got to be at least one more level.
Mm.
So I would say I have maybe 5-6 hours left.
Cool.
Just because I do take it kind of slow. You know, there's a little arrow that points in the right direction where you want to go, and I always run in the opposite direction, and I go look everywhere else first before I progress.
Yep. The wrong way is always the first way.
And of course, then I end up going the right way, only having to go back where I was, but at least I'm, you know, I'm trying to find every little thing, and there's also little tape recorders that you can find all over that have little, like, recordings of people talking about their experiments or about this and that.
Mm.
Very engrossing, very good at sucking you into this world.
Sweet.
Yeah, wow. So, I'm a happy camper right now. But yeah, so we will take a break. And then we'll come back with an extended What Do You Think? Just talking about the Wii U. And it is the future. It is in our future. So hang tight. All right, and we're back now with What Do You Think? Man, that's a really lame pun, by the way, but I love it so much.
What do you think?
Ding. So, yeah, so we're going to just talk about the Wii U. We're going to go over some info that we learned, thoughts, you know, crazy epiphanies, anything that might happen. Or maybe it's all just going to be like rehash.
I think we're going to say amazing, groundbreaking things that are going to blow everyone's mind.
And then I'm going to rehash it.
Okay.
I'm going to rehash what you say that's intuitive and everything.
All right.
So, anyway. All right, so let's start off then with the big thing, which was the release date. So November 18th in the United States.
Terrible. No, I'm just kidding. Okay,
and I should have had this up. It's releasing in, I believe, the end of November for Europe, and then early December for Japan. That's cool for me as an American. You know, I'm down with that. And actually, that's exactly the date I was assuming it would be, which I think is the date a lot of us were thinking. I was surprised that it was going to be split. I thought it might be a global launch, but not at all.
Yeah, people seem to really be surprised that we were
first.
That we were going to be getting it first.
Oh, and I'm going to post in Miyamoto and his thread wherever it is and say first. It's an American flag.
But I believe that that was the case for the original Wii, where I think that we got it in November and everyone else got it in early December.
Let's see, I'm looking it up right now, just because I could not recall if I tried. Yeah, you're exactly right. It was November 19th, 2006 in America, and then December 2nd in Japan.
Yeah, so why, like, are we the test market or something? Like, in case something goes wrong in the first 2 weeks? Like, I don't know. Or maybe they just think that Americans are the trendsetters, and, like, if we freak out about it the way that Americans tend to do, then the rest of the world will be like, whoa, maybe I should check that out.
I don't know. I think with the Wii, maybe one thing they were trying to do was really change their hold on the market in general, the global market, but especially American audiences, because, you know, not so much in Japan, where, like, the 360 tanks, you know, Nintendo does pretty strongly there, considering. Mm-hmm. Here, though, there's such a divide between, like, Nintendo gamers and non-Nintendo gamers.
Yeah.
So, and they were pushing for this whole new market that they wanted to make sure probably that they had enough units for, and that they would just shove in our faces from
sure.
day one. And I think that's kind of what's happening now too. It's got to be a manufacturing thing where they want to make sure they have enough units for America, you know, before okay. That's what I think. Because again, in Japan, especially with that Monster Hunter announcement, like, I forgot who said it in the thread, but yeah, done. Like, they have Japan all mopped up already.
Yeah.
But America, they have to now, it's a whole new challenge where, okay, they got the soccer moms playing Wii, but now they have to get the quote-unquote hardcore gamers, you know. This goes back to, like, 10 episodes ago when we discussed that.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to get those people back, and they have to do it right and quick and fast and before the holidays. And that's another thing, like, we have the holiday situation here. In Japan, they don't have, you know, the Black Friday, the Thanksgiving, or the Christmas season in the way that we do. It's a gauntlet starting, you know, Thanksgiving Day. So they have to be smart about that.
Right.
And I think that's why they figure, you know what, we can't do a global launch before that, and it's irrelevant because, you know what, getting it in November doesn't make any sense to the Japanese market anyway. It doesn't matter. So, you know, our gluttony for consumption and consumerism is probably why we get it first.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, but I'm happy for it. My birthday is just a few days before, so I'm thinking of, like, maybe taking off that Monday just to have a long birthday weekend / Wii U extravaganza.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Or I'll probably just be an adult and not do that.
But,
I know. Well, with Thanksgiving, I'm getting a few days off, you know, Thursday and Friday off there, so do I really need to take Monday off, too? It's kind of a short week anyway, so I might as well work, but who cares? So, yeah, it's releasing on the 18th, and it's going to come in two SKUs, which is kind of the big surprise, that Nintendo was going to finally do that, do a split. Now, I definitely have already, like, okay, let me tell you my quick story. What I did is on Wednesday, the 12th, I went to my GameStop and I pre-ordered Zombie U because I had called the day before and they said, well, we're a small store, so what we're doing, since we have the manpower to do it and we don't, you know, have that many people to call, that we're going to call anyone who has a Wii U game pre-ordered in any fashion. We're going to call them, just let them know when they can get the Wii U reserved. So I was like, all right, damn right, Donnie. Because Donnie's the guy at my Nintendo, or my GameStop. And so I went there, I think I only put $5-$10 down on Zombie U, which is the only official launch game at the time. And then the next day, I just went to work, but I was, you know, waiting by my phone. I had my sister back at home, and she was loaded up with $100, and, well, $115, because I let her, and thanks for doing this for me, for being on call. I let her pick up a Guitar Hero Metallica. She really wanted it. So I was like, okay, I'll buy you that if you just are on call like a doctor. And I'm going to call you when I get the call, and you're going to go pre-order this system under my name. I know it sounds mental, but I own it, and I love it, because that's just who I am. So I got, you know, the whatchamacallit, the thing happened at, I think, 10 o'clock, the big, you know, the party, so to speak. And the conference.
Oh, okay. Right.
And, yeah, I couldn't think of the word.
But I had no idea what you were talking about for a second.
Either did I. It took a little while. So the conference starts at 10, and I, eagerly anticipated the news, and I kept refreshing on my phone while I'm trying to do work, and the boards I was refreshing. So finally I get a call, like, just after 11, and so then I call my sister. I'm like, go, you know. And I think I woke her up. Which, whatever, tough. And so she went and she did it, and it was all good. I called later, and Donnie gave me like a whole earful about things, about just like the news. But I was the second pre-order at my GameStop, only because of an employee that got there first, obviously. So sure. I'm pretty pleased with that. I'm pretty confident that I'm going to get my system. I didn't want to wait like with the Wii, wait in line, that is. But the thing that was troubling was the whole SKU thing, which is how I got into this ball, and that that there's two, and I was kind of surprised by that, and I was set on getting like a white system, and then if there was going to be an SKU, then I wanted the better one, you know. But unfortunately, they locked it to one color, so it's only black. So let me just say really quick the two SKUs for everyone who for some reason may not know, and then you know, I want to hear your thoughts, because you aren't able to drop the money down right now. Nope. We were discussing this beforehand, and so you're not necessarily getting one at launch, but you want to get one as soon as you can, ASAP. That's your status. So, the first basic set is the white Wii U with 8 gigabytes of memory, hard drive space, so to speak. It's got the Wii U gamepad, two AC adapters, I guess one for the system and one for the controller, the sensor bar, an HDMI cable, which was also a surprise, by the way.
Yeah.
There was that threat or the poll on Negative World right before that, and I wanted to say HDMI because in my opinion that they would want to push this HD so much that they would say, look, we're going to just give you this expensive cable.
Right.
And we want you to do this. Don't have any excuse not to do it but your own, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't vote because I was like, they probably won't. You know, it's one of those things. But yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised to see that. But so anyway, then the second one is the deluxe set, which has the 32 gigs of memory. It's black only, the black gamepad, two adapter sensor bar, HDMI cable. It's got plastic pieces to hold, like a cradle for your gamepad, and a stand for, I guess, both the gamepad and the console. Comes with Nintendo Land, which is, I think, going to be $60 when it releases, like a full price thing, so you are saving money there. And then the digital package thing, which they haven't really explained yet. But you're supposed to get, like, points for downloading games that go towards other downloads. That may not be worth it in the end, but I figure, what the hell. Oh, I apologize. My phone just gave me an alarm. So those are the two sets. So which one are you going to go for when you get to?
Eventually, I will go for the deluxe set. There's a couple reasons for that. Perhaps the biggest and yet stupidest reason is that my wife was saying, no matter what, if the black version comes out, that that's the one she wants to get, and I'm fine with that.
Does she have any reason for that? Does it like go with your living room or something?
No, she just thinks it looks awesome. That's all. That's all it is. And she's not, I don't know, she's not opposed to white like the Wii was or anything, but she just thinks it looks so much cooler. who knows? If the original Wii had been black and this one was the first one in white, she might feel total opposite. Yeah. But I think, it'll be good to have more hard drive space, I suppose. Other than that, I don't really care about the extra
plastic,
cradle. Yeah, the extra plastic. I also, unfortunately, am not that excited about Nintendo Land.
Is there any reason?
I hate to sound like that kind of gamer, but if it had online, I would probably be super excited about it.
What an online snob.
Jeez. Exactly. I know.
No, I empathize.
And the thing is, really, with as has been discussed, these games, it seems like they probably rely on local multiplayer. Like, they rely on not only the experience of, being in the same room and laughing about whatever's happened, but also, like, verbally coordinating with other people and visually saying, like, oh, go there, or whatever. But I just don't have enough people in my real life who don't have kids or don't live too far away and, would be able to come over enough to justify such an experience on a regular basis.
It's a really valid concern, though. I mean, I'm the same way. My cousin and his wife are some of my, closest friends, and they live, pretty far away these days. My girlfriend's not very close. My best friend's not very close.
Yeah.
Like, out of state, not very close. So, it's challenging. And then all of you negative worlders, you guys are all my friends too, and it's kind of a bummer that, Nintendo continues to kind of make it harder for us to play games together.
Yeah.
In the year 2002, or 12. although in the year 2002, I think...
would have been amazing.
I think online was probably pretty decent back then. I don't know. Maybe not. But I'm just tired. Anyway, continue.
It's weird because, I totally get what Nintendo is going for. And I feel like in a lot of ways with their approach to online and the way that they treat Street Pass on the 3DS, I feel like they're trying to, in maybe an unspoken way, like, make it so that our culture is like that, where people do get together to play games all the time, where people do carry their handheld gaming device with them at all times. I feel like they're trying to force that upon us. And it's obviously for their benefit if people are more focused on games, but it also, if you think about it, it is kind of for our benefit too, because it would be awesome if that's the way
we had more friends.
Well, yeah, and if people were more willing to, like, oh, hey, drop what you're doing, let's just relax and play video games for a little while, like, even if even if I had more people with that amount of time, they might play games on their smartphone, or they might have, actually a lot of them, they like have like a 360, they just don't play or whatever, but we're not really to the point as a culture where it's like, let's get together to play video games, unless you're like a kind of a dork who's been doing it for their whole life. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know if I phrased that
I don't know, maybe my life's very different, but as I've grown older, I just don't go hang out with people just to hang out anymore. At least not that much. Like, there's always got to be an agenda, something to do.
I know.
I always say, what happened to, like, the days of, like, going over your friend's house to watch TV? Like, you're going to do it at home. Why not go to your friend's house and watch TV with them?
I know.
The two, you don't talk. You just sit and watch TV. You occasionally comment.
Exactly. Exactly.
What we'll touch into later, Nintendo TV looks like trying to do that from your home, which is kind of cool, I appreciate Nintendo still being a stickler with local multiplayer, because I do appreciate that as someone who grew up in the 90s and that's what I had to rely on.
Yep.
It's just weird because it's like, it just requires so much extra effort, from your social life to, and commitment from other people who you can't control to actually get that to succeed.
Right.
I've been trying to get my cousin to play Settlers of Catan, which is a board game, for like months. And his ass is just like lollygagging on the whole thing. Finally, I think next, like 2 weekends from now, we're going to do it. But it's just so
hard. Isn't that crazy that you have to plan a board game out like weeks in advance?
It is. And I know he's a busy guy, but it's just like, it's amazing how life, you know, does that to you. So, I mean, I guess in that case, it'd be kind of cool if we could play, you know, an online version of it or something, which you can.
Yeah.
But it takes away from, like, you know, the intimacy, not, you know, not in a sexual way, but the intimacy of just being close with another human being and just, like, in the same room at the same table.
Right, right.
And that's something that's lacking that I appreciate Nintendo holds on to.
Right, yeah. So I feel like it's kind of like Nintendo tries to, like, force us to eat our vegetables or something like that. But it's,
you know,
just
what?
Not...
I'm healthier because I eat my vegetables, so, I mean, I think that this could be a good thing.
But the other thing on this whole dual, or, you know, two SKUs, I don't like that kind of stuff. I'm sure I've said it before on the podcast. I just, you know, I don't even care if there was only one and it was only at $350. It's like, I just don't even want to think. Maybe it makes me less of an adult, but I just don't even want the responsibility of having to decide and,
I wouldn't say
that. And then later wondering, like, oh, you know, I should have gotten this because of blank that I didn't know about ahead of time. And, yeah.
Well, see, that's it. It's not a matter of not being adult because you don't want to think, but, like, for me, who wanted a white Wii U and I wanted, like, you know, I did want a charging dock for my controller because it'll be easier to set up on my desk along with my 3DS charger, etc. You know, so I wanted these extra values, and maybe I could buy them separately, but they haven't announced that, so I can't play that gamble.
Right.
But right now, both SKUs, or SKUs, they both lack value to me, which is kind of a bummer. Like, if it was just one, I wouldn't even have a chance to feel that way about one or the other. But, you know, with the Wii, that was the case. I got my Wii, it was great, and it didn't matter what was in it, because I had nothing to compare it to disappoint me. But right now, both bum me out, because I wanted the white over the black. And I know it's a color preference, and it's the most irrelevant part of the system, but and so I've come to terms.
But it means something to you.
Yeah, it does. I mean, we have our preferences for a reason, and there's a reason that colors exist. But but that's just the problem. You can't please everybody in general, but you definitely can't please anyone if you start splitting things up. It's weird because like you try to please more people with a SKU like that, but then by limiting it in certain ways, I don't know. If you're going to have SKUs, you have all options, I guess. You should be able to like call them up and say, okay, I want the system, I want this much memory, like almost like a PC. It's the only way you can like please everybody.
Yeah, well, in that case, I hope that they never do that.
Oh, amen to that. No, it's just easier.
That's why it's all,
it's easier for everyone if they just have one. Yeah.
Yeah, and, I mean, personally, I would probably go with the white, just because. I think that's what I would prefer.
Well, like, I had a black GameCube, but I like the white aesthetic of the Wii, and I probably will keep my Wii out, along with the Wii U, because I don't know. I may not transfer things over and stuff like that. I'm still not sure. But either way, I may or may not have them out, but either way, I like it. I don't know.
Yep.
There's the ineloquency coming out, but I like it.
All right.
Yeah, so we'll move on to other. We have other topics and not so much time. So let me go over the list of, like, launch window games. Mm-hmm. And I want to just hear pretty much I won't go over the whole list. It's a big list.
Mm-hmm.
Of launch day and then launch window, which, yeah, it's like 5 months, but still. 4 or 5 months, yeah. It's really impressive. This might be one of their best launches yet, I really feel, as far as them being broad. With who they're grabbing, I feel like there's 2-3 games for everybody in this list.
Right.
Which is pretty cool and pretty smart on Nintendo. I don't know if you have the list up in front of you or not, but...
I do have a list.
Okay. What interests you? Like, what... When you finally get your system, what are the first ones you're going to have to get right away? Pretend it's launch game, or launch day, and you're able to get it. So which one's the launch?
And I have found several hundred dollars in my couch cushions.
Well, I found tons of money on corpses in BioShock, so maybe go that route.
All right, so launch day would be New Super Mario Bros. U, and then Zombie U.
Mm-hmm.
And and then Nano Assault Neo, mm-hmm. which have they even said if that's going to be download only or physical retail?
I'm not sure.
So it would, you know, I always like having the physical copy if possible, but if it's not possible, then I will just download it because I loved the 3DS game.
Now, did that come out on a flash cart?
The 3DS one? Yeah.
Okay. Then, you know, then it's possible it'll be a disc-based game. I know that Nintendo's planning to do two things. One, all first-party games, unless they require some sort of special add-on, will be downloadable as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's been confirmed. And then they're not going to require third parties to do that, but every third party has the option. So you very well could see them doing both, maybe.
Yeah, I mean that would be just fine with me. You know, the one caveat with that is, you know, I don't think it's just like a HD remake. I've just seen the short trailer for Nano Assault Neo, but if it is in fact a whole new game, then I, you know, 100% getting it. If it's just an HD remake, I probably would not get it at all. If it's somewhere in between, you know, if it's like the same thing but with a few more levels or some new weapons or modes or something, then I'd have a decision to make.
Right.
So I think that's all for my like confirmed launch titles. As far as if I just break it out into launch window, I mean, there's not too many more, but it's Scribblenauts Unlimited, which I've dabbled in the other Scribblenauts games. Actually, I never played Super, but I played the first one,
mm-hmm.
and it was okay. It was not as mind blowing as I expected. You know, when it first came out, it was like, oh my god, you know, this breakthrough in gaming. You can write whatever you want, and then it's on the screen, and you know.
Didn't have its full potential.
Yeah, because ultimately the gameplay just came down to, I don't know, it was like, yeah, exactly, just jetpack and then go get the star and that's it. And so I can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe I'm just totally being, suckered a second time, but there's something about the, Scribblenauts Unlimited that just, I don't know, it just looks so much fun. And maybe it's not this game changer of an experience, but it just looks like a lot of fun. And that's the point of games, right? So,
sure.
So I'm really excited about that. And actually, I read there was, I think it was like the August issue of Nintendo Power had like a really long piece on Scribblenauts Unlimited. And just the more I read about it, I mean, the more excited I was getting. I mean, they are incorporating some plot elements. So I'm excited about that. We're gonna, you know, learn about Max and how he got his magic notepad and all that stuff. And
oh,
I know,
man, I've been having nightmares about know. That. Just waiting to know.
Yeah, I know. I'm the only guy who's gonna care, but I'm gonna care.
You're gonna be like BioShock, what?
Exactly. We'll have to do a game by game comparison of the.
They'll be so similar to compare.
And just like the fact that you can, you know, create these crazy things and then share them with other people, I think that will be kind of fun too. And you don't have to, like, you can, you know, create this insane object that you really like and then save it for later so you won't have to recreate it every time. Right.
Yeah. That's a cool feature. That right there. Like, if they can cut away the fat as far as, like, the tediousness that the first game had.
Yeah.
Then that could bring me back.
Yep.
Like, I didn't get the sequel, and I wasn't really interested in this Wii U one, but you seem to be pretty psyched about it, so that makes me feel like there's some validity in it. And so I'll have to see what you have to say.
Yeah, and I know it's coming out for 3DS as well, but I don't know. It's just a game where I think I'm going to have more fun with it on the big screen. I think also because the scope of each level is supposed to be a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, like the first one, it was like these little bite-sized almost puzzles. But in this one, I think it's more of like a world that you can go around and kind of like talk to NPCs and like, oh, this guy needs this done. So then you go and do it. And then you wander over here and someone else has another task for you. So, yeah, that should be good. The other two, as far as launch window, are Lego City Undercover.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these are not the type of games that I would normally be that attracted to. I mean, I've played the Lego Star Wars Complete Saga, but that's the only other Lego game I've played, and I did thoroughly enjoy it. There's something about this Undercover one, I think. It looks like there's some stealth kind of elements and like sneaking around. And also it just looks like, I don't know if open world is the right term, but it just looks like you can kind of really just mess around. Just like go anywhere and do anything.
It looks like Lego GTA.
Yeah, kind of.
But you're playing as the good guys.
Right, right. So, yeah. So for all those reasons, I just think I'll have a real good time with that game. So that one's on my radar. And then the last one is the recently announced, though I'm not sure if confirmed for North America, but Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, or I think it's sort of, yeah, Ultimate. Do you happen to know if they've confirmed that for North America? I know everyone was all abuzz about it, so I assume it is confirmed.
From what I'm looking at, it is, I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure on how confirmed it is, but I mean, it's very likely it will be in America. The question is when.
Yeah.
There's nothing to say that it'll come out in the launch window.
Yeah. So my thing with that game is, it's kind of like with the Dano Salt thing, where if it truly seems like a different game, like a brand new game that is just sort of built on the Monster Hunter 3, world, then I'll be right there. But if it's basically the same game with a couple more monsters and some new gear or something, that would be tough, not even because of the price tag, but because I have already spent 500 hours getting all that stuff, and I wouldn't want to have to start over grinding, you know.
Right.
Doing the exact same.
Well, that could kill the momentum for you, like, instantly.
Right. On the other hand, you know, I was just trying to think to myself, you know, what could they do if somehow I could import my old character? If the games are that similar, that would be amazing. But as I think about it, they probably would really not want to allow that, even if they could, because then I don't know if they would find this undesirable. But day one, you'd have people who are, you know.
Right, because they leveled up and.
Right, right. So I don't know if the people at Capcom would feel that would ruin the experience or what, but. Also, I have no idea how they would actually be able to import those saves. Although I think you can transfer saves to the Wii U, no? So.
I'm sure you can. There's gotta be a way. It's just, you know, a Wi-Fi data transfer at this point.
Yeah.
You know, technology is definitely there for it.
Yeah, so that's why I'm sort of up in the air about that one. But man, I mean, I'm just so thirsty for more new Monster Hunter. It just depends on, you know, in what increment I'm willing to invest for it, you know, the time, if not just the money. But Monster Hunter 4 can't get here soon enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it for me. So what about, what are you looking forward to? What will you be purchasing in and around your birthday?
Okay, so Nintendo Land was something that I was on the fence about, but getting more intrigued about every day.
But then I just totally soured you on it.
Yeah,
right now.
No, I'm gonna get my free copy, and then I'm gonna flush down the toilet.
Throw it away? Yeah, that's the right thing. Maybe boil it.
I'm gonna fling it on the concrete like I used to do with AOL CDs back as a kid. Seriously, I would do that once in a while. Whenever I'd get one, I'd go outside and try to break it. Of course, I'd have to clean it up after, but still. So, Nintendo Land looks great, though. And I don't have, like, four other people to play, you know, five-player multiplayer all the time. But, you know, I foresee a future in the next 6 to 8 months where, like, more people are going to be back in my area and everything. So, mm-hmm. that can happen. And I think it just looks fun. I like Nintendo-themed stuff, so... I think it'll be really fun, yeah, believe it or not. And so that, for sure, I would get it anyway. But actually, the fact that it's $60 would make me less likely to get it at launch, so I'm glad it kind of just gets thrown into my mix. The way I'm seeing it with this SKU, I'm getting Nintendo Land for $50, and then I'm getting everything else for free.
Mm-hmm.
And New Super Mario Bros. U, I'm pre-ordering that today. I'm going to go put money down and just pay it all off today.
Cool.
Easy. And then Zombie U, for sure, as I already mentioned. That looks really, really good. And I think it'll continue the itch that BioShock is getting right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of gore, but I like thrilling stuff like that. I like spooky stuff in that way, you know? So I've always been a fan of zombies. Just never like the, oh, let's rip open the guts now. Like, I'm always more about the threat that is really
totally agree. Totally agree.
So those three are my guaranteed launch day titles. The rest, though... You know, for launch day, not really concerned about it. Looking at the list, no joke, Call of Duty might be fun for me, but it's not something I'll be getting launch day at all.
Have you played the other recent ones?
I think I rented one once. Okay. The last first-person shooter I played on Nintendo's console was probably The Conduit. But I like that a lot. You know, it was a fun game.
I did like that game.
Disney's Epic Mickey 2, I'm going to be skeptical about that. After, you know, the first one. But you know, that's on my radar as well. And Scribblenauts, now that you've brought it to my attention, is also there. But none of that's for launch day at all. It's just, they're on my radar.
Yeah, I also have Epic Mickey 2 on my radar. I'm gonna take a wait-and-see approach with that game. The first one, you know, really, just so much potential. But ultimately, I'm not sure it was worth what I... paid for it, so
right. And so that's launch day, but there are some other games that are launch window that are intriguing, very much so. Like you said, Lego City Undercover. Mm-hmm. I've never played a single Lego game. I might have tried one out at a store for like 3 seconds, but I could have just been thinking of like a YouTube video that I watched. I don't know. But this looks really fun, and the graphics look really impressive. The HD for like what you would expect for blocky Legos looks really, really good. Mm. So I think that it'll be really immersive of a Lego world. And I grew up playing Legos like crazy, so
of course.
This seems like a great game. 007 Legends is intriguing. Oh, that was the last first-person shooter I played. GoldenEye 007, the remake.
Gotcha.
That was good. That was very good. So hopefully this is something that captures that kind of thing.
So now that one, is that... Because I remember when... the 007 game was going to get an HD port, and I think they had a different, slightly different subtitle. But is that not what this is,
this
then?
This is something completely different.
Is it really? Oh, okay.
I think GoldenEye 007 did come out on the other systems, the HD systems.
Right.
But, no, this is, from what I can gather, I haven't seen too much about it. It's Activision has taken, like, 7 famous Bond plots and put them into the same game. So you do like 7 different scenarios based on 7 different movies. You probably play as all the different Bonds in the course of this.
That's rather intriguing.
Yeah. Like, I think Moonraker is one that they definitely are focusing on, because I remember seeing Jaws in their media. But so that's why it's called 007 Legends, and I think that's where the 7 comes into. It's like 7 different scenarios. And then there's probably a multiplayer, you know, thing, which is going to hopefully be good. That's what will sell me more than the main game, because GoldenEye 007 I was playing like crazy for a while. And the only thing that smushed that was, again, like, some of the people that I played with on the boards were just so exceptionally good that it was starting to get unfun.
And okay.
But also, like, the leveling up mechanic was so slow once you got, like, high enough to actually get stuff. So you'd be playing against just random people who all, like, would cheat. And then, some of them legitimately, sure, but there's a lot of cheating going on, too. So they either would... you wouldn't be able to kill them, or they would automatically have all these great weapons without even being the right levels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that killed it. So hopefully this can get me my first-person shooter multiplayer fix. I'd rather go with a Bond license and a Bond theme than Call of Duty any day.
So, yeah.
Big James Bond fan. BitShip Runner 2 is something also on my list of intriguing games. But it's losing, it seems like it's lost the charm of the 8-bit style that I
really liked. I know. That seems like such an odd choice.
Yeah, so
I'm not
sure.
I don't know why they would do that.
I'm not sure how much I'm going to like it just from that alone. Because if you strip that, then the gameplay is left to be held up to itself. And the gameplay is fun, but I mean, as far as like rhythm games, I mean, I have other rhythm games.
Yeah. You know? So is this, because obviously the previous ones were downloadable and relatively small titles. For this Runner 2, I mean, is it supposed to be, like, are they just blowing it out as far as the size, like number of levels, or?
From what I know, which isn't that much, but from what I know, it's definitely going to be download only. It's going to be probably on the same scale as BitShip Runner, if not maybe a little bit bigger, but it's not like some sort of, suddenly there's 10 worlds of 13 levels or whatever. It's just,
right.
I don't imagine them going any bigger than maybe an extra world or something.
Gotcha.
But that's on my radar, and that's not even a sure thing, but there are three other games that I have to mention in the stupid launch window, which is what's like great and also bad. It's like I have to, I'm trying to move in the next few months and that kind of thing, and like so I have all that on my mind, and then I have all these games that I just, it's like a tick, you know. I've been playing Nintendo since I was 4. This is also such a commodity. This is water, electricity, internet, and Nintendo.
Yep.
You know, and oh, and food. But these next three games though are on my radar like crazy. Pikmin 3. And I'm basing that only off of the fact that the game looks great and I love the Little King story, but I've never played the other Pikmin, so I know it's not the same, but I want to get that kind of gameplay and fun out of Little King story in that Pikmin 3 world, and it looks beautiful. Like, I'm going to buy an HDTV for this system, because I've never had one before, so.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm going to be just glued to this stuff, and that looks like one of the, you know, prettiest games that I've seen. And then also, I need to, you know, tighten up the abs a little bit and stuff. So Wii Fit U is on my radar. I definitely like Wii Fit Plus. I still use once in a while, and I do enjoy it. So I think that they're just going to get better. The only thing that would deter me from that is if they just simply add more. Like, I want them to not just put in like yoga moves. Like, I don't want more yoga moves just for the sake of yoga moves. I want to know more about what it's doing for me, or I want there to be more stat tracking, in a sense.
Sure.
You know, like, there's that, what the hell is it? This, I don't know. There's some sort of device I heard about where, like, it tracks your heart rate and all this sort of thing. Like, I almost would like to see that heart rate monitor from Nintendo show up. Because having your heart rate totally helps you know how many calories you're actually burning based on your weight and everything.
You know? Sure.
Makes it much more accurate. And like that's what I want from like a Wii Fit U, is I want something that actually I can monitor my health better with. I don't want just an exercise game. I want like a personal trainer on like a real level, you know? And of course I'm not going to take it, you know, advice like, oh, you have a cough, why don't you go take this medicine? I'm not looking for that. I'm not looking for a virtual doctor, but virtual Miyamoto pushing drugs. But or a Dr. Mario pushing drugs. You know, you need some codeine. But yeah, but I would like to see a more involved thing. Like, I've used sites like MyFitnessPal to monitor my calorie intake and just like see what I was eating and see what kind of intake of sodium and this and that. Like, I'd like to be able to almost see that kind of thing linked in, you know? And I'm not going to get that probably. So I'll probably get it for the games in the end. But the Wonderful 101, which was originally Project P100. Have you seen much about this game?
Have they shown much about this game? I mean, I've seen what I think
there
is out there.
There was that surprise trailer, and then I don't know how much more has happened, but that looked really fun, too. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it looks great. I'm not sure it's exactly the type of gameplay that I want, but, you know, it could be one that I pick up at a later date.
So yeah, that's the whole rundown, and I've had so much more to say about this stuff, and we have a lot to discuss, so let's try to go through this, because we are kind of running out of time here.
Sure.
The other big thing was the Nintendo TV announcement, which was pretty surprising, to say the least. What's been interesting from what I've been listening to is that tech podcasts who aren't Nintendo or video game centric have really picked up on this. Mm. People who have wanted, like, some sort of, like the Apple TV, they wanted that to do it. You know, they're like, all that talk about the Apple TV, maybe it'll do what Nintendo TV is doing. And I'm not going to go into the whole thing of what it's going to do. I'll just leave it to the listeners to figure that out, because we don't have enough time for that. But it's pretty much an integration with Hulu, you know, all those kind of streaming services, with your actual TV, with your TiVo, just this thing that where you can just search for something and it'll tell you all the different ways you can watch it. When you watch sports, you can actually chat and do polls with your friends. There was something I heard in a podcast. This is just a wishful thinking thing, but it'd be really cool to perhaps have it so, like, okay, if you're watching an episode of How I Met Your Mother, and this joke really made you laugh, or maybe you saw an Easter egg in a scene, you can actually leave a note. So, like, when you watched later, you know, someone else watched later, they'd actually be able to have that, like, note pop up, because that's your friend. Mm. That's not something that's confirmed or anything, but that would be really cool, and maybe they're going that route. I mean, just like we were saying, how nobody ever goes to their friend's house to watch TV anymore, well, if you can't, at least you can still hear what your friend would have said.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
Almost like a recorded track, like almost like
MST3K.
MST3K?
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of like that, you know, or like a director's commentary on a DVD, but it's your friend commenting on the show. That'd be kind of cool. But, I mean, you were saying before the podcast you don't have that much of an interest in this?
Well, just because I generally am not... I'm generally not attracted too much to these, you know, all-in-one box functionality type things. Also, you know, we have not had cable for, like, I think close to 2 years now. Mm-hmm. We just have a desktop computer hooked up to our main television. That's how we access shows. So we do Hulu and Netflix, but it's kind of already fairly centralized for us, you know? Mm-hmm,
right. You don't need, the differences in the two things aren't so drastic that it's cumbersome. I mean, you just have one machine for one thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Basically now it's just split between the desktop that's hooked up and the game console that's hooked up. Of course, we don't have DVR functionality, and that would be nice, but that's something we would have to have separately in order to use the Nintendo TV anyway. If Nintendo TV somehow provided DVR functionality, that would be awesome. But
It will link up with your, well, your TiVo DVR, not all
DVRs, but you still have to have that service.
Oh, you're saying, okay, right? If it would have it without it.
Right.
That would
be
nice, yeah. I mean, that would be a dream for me, actually, because I do a lot of my viewing also via the internet.
Yep.
In fact, even when I I don't have a TiVo, but when I DVR a show, I sometimes end up watching it on my computer anyway.
Mm.
You know, it's yeah, like that was the backup on the TV.
That was the one thing when we sort of made this leap, was the one thing that we really missed and do still miss is the DVR functionality, because, you know, it was just so convenient when you were watching live TV to just be able to pause whenever, or, oh, I missed something and let me go back 5 seconds, or, you know, I'm going to be watching a sporting event and I don't want to watch the commercials, so I'll just leave a pause, do something else for 45 minutes, you know, all of those great things. So,
yeah, I often do that, like with The Office that just came on last week or a few days ago. I didn't start it till like 9:10, just because then I can fast forward to the commercials and watch the show all at once.
Yep.
And still be done by 9:30.
Yep. So I do miss that sort of thing. But anyway, kind of unrelated.
It's still cool, though. And I mean, like, when I move, one of the things I've been considering is maybe not getting cable, because I can get most of my shows via the internet, so what's the point? And I don't spend that much time just browsing TV, so it's kind of irrelevant. Right. But,
and it's just so expensive.
Yeah. Oh, that too, yeah. I mean, it's insane. I would like to move to a place where, you know, I can pay per channel.
Yep.
You know, and just get like the 20 channels I actually want, and then get rid of all this other crap. But yep. I know why every other cable company doesn't want that, so it's a it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But so with me moving, you know, soon hopefully, you know, we might not do that, so this might be more irrelevant, you know, later after I've started to use it. But you know, it'll be interesting to see if they try to adhere to that sort of thing still, even if you don't have a TV, because having Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime TV or whatever the hell that's called, those are three major services that a lot of people use. So even that alone could be really great as long as they continue to make sure that that's efficient and feature filled and all that.
Sure. And you know, I will say the stuff that Nintendo makes, I mean, I'm always pleasantly surprised somehow with the added either functionality or usefulness. Or I mean, I just yesterday, because of a thread on the Negative World Forum, just discovered how in-depth the 3DS activity log is. I'd never even opened it up before. And this is coming from someone who really enjoyed that functionality on the Wii. You know, I don't know. I always got a kick out of going through and seeing what I played and how it tracked, you know, number of times I played the game, and, being able to do the recommendations and see what other people were playing and stuff. So yeah, I mean, I just discovered this thing on 3DS and it was, really interesting, super fun. So you know,
if Nintendo can capitalize on that data, because that's very valuable data that's sitting there being just added every day by all of us, you know, if they can use that for the Wii U as well to really make valuable suggestions for our purchases and our needs in the future, that could be a really great feature that I don't see on the Xbox.
Right.
Like, the Xbox pushes like a Best Buy would push. They push whatever the hell they want to sell, you know. But I want to see things that are relevant to me. Like almost how YouTube allows you to skip ads you don't care about. Because that's cool, because then you'll start showing me ads I do care about. Because if I see an ad for a Mario game, even if I already know about the game, I might watch it. And that gives revenue to them. And so to cater the ads to the specific user on a per-user level can be really cool. So as far as advertising, that data is useful for that. However, I've definitely screwed up my data a little bit, because when I did that last night in the thread, for the past 2 months, I had changed my clock so I could get more coins because I was playing Finally.
Oh, no.
And so, I don't have, like, any data for the last 2 months, but yet I have a lot of data from 2009. So it kind of sucks.
Oh, actually, Steven.
I stopped doing it recently because TheatreRhythm started saving my best scores with a certain date. In 2009, I was like, that sucks. And then, plus, I mean, I'm far enough to where, like, I don't really care anymore, but, so I did fix that, but.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so anyway, we got one more thing to discuss, and then we probably should head out to our various lives. But later, let's watch TV together, man.
Cool.
You know? Yeah, let's do it. One thing I just found this kind of funny. I'm not like a Sony hater per se. I mean, again, I wanted to play their Final Fantasy games, but I just don't find Sony to be that great of a company as far as like, I've always found them to be kind of a bully and just kind of smug as a console manufacturer and stuff like that. You know, the games on them are almost a different breed from what I'm talking about.
Before you even get to your point, I mean, let me just interject there and say that, I mean, I agree, but I think it's a result of the fact that they stepped in, you know, they had the PS1 and then the PS2, and they both just obliterated the competition. So by the time the PS3 came around, I think that they sort of, felt completely justified in like, well, we are obviously the greatest, console makers, and we obviously know more about video games than you do, and we know that like a $600 console is what the market wants right now.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that they did become arrogant, they did become bullies, but I think it's kind of, you know, we as the audience sort of created that monster because they were just so successful. I mean, the PS2, they're still making games, and you know, you still see the PS2 show up on on reports when they, when third parties detail, like, you know, best-selling hardware and such. I mean, could you imagine if the GameCube was still being reported in these, in these data collections? So
no, it's true.
Yeah, but anyway. Point.
But the reason, yeah, I mean, well, the reason that I brought it up is because they recently put a press release out saying that the PS3 Plus, their Vita, is totally better, or at least equivalent. But it's like that—that's how you should get your gaming, and not the Wii U and its gamepad. That it can do everything that the Wii U will do, and don't you find that just to be a little bit ridiculous? I mean, I know we haven't seen the Wii U in our hands yet, but give me a break.
My reaction to that would be the what's her name? That gymnast with the American gymnast with the unimpressed face. What's her name?
Oh, I have no idea.
Michaela or something like that. That's a visual representation of my reaction to hearing that, because it's the same thing with like Microsoft and that smart glass thing, where I feel like, yeah, okay, maybe that's possible. All right, let's just say it is possible. Okay, obviously the Vita is very powerful. It communicates well with the PS3, but are they actually going to do that? Like, I could see, you know, they'll probably be like less than a dozen games that ever actually use that connectivity the way that the Wii U will with literally every game.
It's the problem that Sony's been having with their general lack of creativity. Like, I hand it to Microsoft at least for doing Kinect, which was a different way of doing motion controls, you know? But Sony, okay, so Nintendo comes out with the motion controls, Sony does the wand. What else was I thinking? Shit.
I will just say, I mean, I don't ever, well, in the near future, I don't ever see myself playing Kinect, but I do respect it a lot. Yeah. I mean, I think that was really a genius device, even though the market might not be ready for it right now. You know, right now it's kind of limited to kind of these crappy games, but I bet someday that technology will really be important to gaming, or maybe just the way we interact with media in general. Sure. That's just my opinion. So, yeah, I definitely respect what they did there.
And so my point with Sony is, like, everything for them seems to be an afterthought. You know, so, like, the Move controller was an afterthought. The 6-axis was their immediate afterthought. Like, oh, look, this thing moves. This detects motion. Yeah. Look at that, you know? And now here it's like, oh, well, we have a shitty... well, generally shitty handheld. I mean, it doesn't sell very well. I'm not sure what kind of game quality is on there, but it certainly just isn't as successful as the 3DS.
Yeah, and they totally were, you know, now it's all about the touch screens on that device as well.
True, yeah. So it's like, you know, Nintendo will do something that is successful, even just for them, let alone, like, globally successful, and then, you know, and then Sony's got to try to, like, just mooch on it. Like,
yeah,
I feel like Sony should just start doing their own thing, like Nintendo did, and find their own niche. Because the thing that that makes anything successful when there's a sea of copycats is when you make your own niche.
Yeah,
and that's what Nintendo did. They catered to an audience that simply wasn't being catered to yet. And and look where it got them. So, like, instead of playing catch up, what you do is you skip that moment. And you go forward to the next one, and you beat them to the next punch.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of hilarious. Like, in the thread that that Shin Riley had posted, like, all he did was post a link, and then he posted that gif of Michael Jackson eating popcorn from the Thriller. It's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
It's exactly how I feel about, like, the whole article that these two together easily rivals the Wii U, which easily, no. I mean, and then Zero... I believe he's the first comment, talks about how the cost right there is not going to rival that. And even so, like, just, I don't know, developers are now having to play catch up with concepts, and people have been thinking about the Wii U for a long time, and every single person who makes a Wii U game is going to be thinking about that controller in mind, and it's just, this is the Wii all over again with them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it is really weird how much Sony and Microsoft will scoff at ideas that Nintendo comes out with, and then you know, even right now, we don't know to what extent the Wii U will be a success. I mean, I think obviously anyone on Negative World probably is, you know, we're probably predisposed to thinking it will do well. Yeah. We don't know, though. It might not. But the thing is, Sony and Microsoft have already got things in place to rip it off just in case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is, it's just so odd that they, you know, that they would sit there and be like, oh, you know, we don't think that a tablet gaming experience with a console really makes sense and blah, blah, blah. But here's our watered down version of it anyway. And by watered down, I obviously don't mean lack of horsepower, but watered down in the sense that it just probably won't be supported, really. Yeah. Because what would really be the incentive? I mean, the developers are going to plan on people having a PS3 and then also investing in a Vita and wanting that experience, but not wanting to buy it because it had Nintendo written on it. Like, I don't know how big that segment is.
Yeah. Which, that just reminded me of one more thing that I gotta mention before we go.
Do it.
The Bayonetta 2.
Oh, surprise. Yeah.
It was hilarious how freaking uppity so many people got.
People are not happy.
And it's not like, okay, if Mario showed up on, you know, the next Microsoft console, that wouldn't be the same scenario, you know what I mean?
Oh.
So you can't make comparisons like that, but from the sound of it, it was like Nintendo performed a bailout on Bayonetta, and yet they're getting shit on for doing it.
Yeah. No, it's really weird how, you know, I think why there's so much, why it's so mentally painful is because for that type of gamer, that type of game just didn't, you know, wouldn't be caught dead as like a Nintendo exclusive. You know, like,
it's very alive because of it.
Right, exactly. So there's this, you know, huge cognitive dissonance where it's like, wait, but I, you know, though, that's not supposed to be, and
does not compute.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, it's really sad because that just goes back to that whole argument of like, well, why don't you like the, you know, Nintendo systems? It can't just be that you're so shallow that you won't play a system that also has, you know, Wii Sports on it, right? And it's like, no, it's because it has no games. And then they, of course, they get the games, and then the anger and the rage.
Well, yeah, people will change their argument to fit whatever spin they need to still not like it, you know? You put a bunch of games out there. Some people legitimately will change. And I've already seen some, like, people who have said on forum comments and stuff saying, like, you know, I don't really like Nintendo games, but I'm impressed with their move, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Or, like, I give them props for having the balls to pick this up and put it on their system, you know?
Yep.
And that's such a mature way to think about it. Like, you don't have to cry over spilt milk. It's just spilt milk.
Yeah.
You know, for you. And
I will say that typically I think that a game, ideally for me, if a series starts on one platform, the sequels should be on that.
Oh, platform. I agree. Like, I mean,
just so you don't dick over the people who, you know, got you.
Like, I can, and that kind of anger I can understand. Like,
right, but in this case, as you said, it sounds like it just wouldn't have been happening if not for Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So it would have been either no game at all or.
So maybe this would have been better received if maybe they had not announced it like, look what we got, but more like, hey, well, I mean, just kind of incorporated their whole sob story of how they weren't able to do it from the get-go.
Yeah.
It was like 3 days later that they finally were like opening up about how they weren't able to get the financing to finish it, and then Nintendo stepped up. But at that point, everyone's already pissed off thinking that like Nintendo stole something from them.
They should have had, instead of the normal Bayonetta 2 trailer, they should have had Bayonetta going like door to door, talking to all these other publishers, and then having it like slammed in her face, and then she's like in a gutter, crying, and has nothing to eat, and then Mario just walks up and extends a hand, and then it just says Bayonetta 2. Wii U exclusive.
I feel like there would have been some sort of Pikmin in a shirt pocket in this video or something.
Yeah.
Still, somehow, that would have been fitting.
And then Miyamoto pretends to throw it at the audience.
Yeah. And instead he throws blades like Bayonetta or bullets or whatever the hell.
Yep.
My last question to you before we go then is, do you foresee this kind of thing happening again in the future? Do you think that Nintendo's got more up their sleeve as far as trying to acquire these surprise exclusives or maybe interest in rescuing games when needed?
Man, I don't know, but it certainly, wouldn't that just be the best way to get their street cred back, you know, if someone thought that they needed it back in the first place? I've heard recently a friend of mine came to me with the rumor, I didn't even see it myself, but that they were, that Nintendo was supposedly like in talks with trying to acquire Rare mm-hmm. from Microsoft so that they could release, Banjo-Kazooie games. I would love that. Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of move that, I mean, I think that would get so many people on their side so quickly. Now, of course, the issue would be if Microsoft would ever want to relinquish that control, but if those are the kind of moves that Nintendo is at least trying to make, then yeah, I think that that's paints an especially bright picture of the future.
You know, they've got money to burn, and I think it's a really great way to, like you were saying, it's just a really great way to use your spare resources. And instead of trying to like make a console and then just plead with developers, start being the hero a little bit.
Right.
You know?
Because there are so many games. I mean, we could be here all day with the list of games that people want more of, but especially, for whatever reason, the market didn't really dictate it at the time.
And especially with Banjo-Kazooie, I mean, that third one, like, it wasn't even a true sequel.
Yeah.
It got changed around like 5 times. I read the story about it. And then it just turned into a car parts sim, you know?
Yep.
So to make a truly authentic, you know, sequel to that, which Nintendo doing a platformer, would just, again, that'd be success most likely. So.
Yep. And I remember in my ignorance of the N64, because, again, I was a PS1 kid, I kind of thought Banjo-Kazooie was like a first-party Nintendo title.
Yeah, I can see where
because
you think
it just that. Yeah, it seems to just fit so much. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, will say that it's kind of like a Mario 64, I guess, ripoff would be like
bit.
A really impolite way to say it,
yeah.
But like, you know, it builds on that foundation.
But I think, to me, honestly, as far as platformers go, inspirational platformers from the N64 era, it's that and Mario, the two of them together. Because Banjo-Kazooie did all sorts of things that Mario didn't do. Banjo couldn't have existed without Mario, but Mario probably wouldn't have maybe evolved how it had it not seen what Banjo had done. Like,
right.
They kind of worked on each other.
Yep. And that's what you get from healthy competition.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Like, I don't ever want to see Nintendo be the only company around at, you know, that sort of thing. But I love seeing them just earn more respect that they've always deserved. I mean, obviously they haven't been the greatest company at every corner, but they've still just, you can't doubt that they've always just been hardworking. And they've taken wrong paths, but they've always done their best at it. And and then, you know, immaturity is usually where the internet gets tainted.
Yeah.
Just the lack of
stupid internet.
Stupid internet, indeed.
I'm glad this podcast isn't on the internet. That's for sure.
I know, if the internet was like somehow responsible for this happening, I'd burn it to the ground.
Yep.
Yeah, I would have to just cut every cord in my house and. Anyway, luckily, ignorance is bliss. This happens through magic. But, that or you're actually in this metal box and I'm like on my desk here, right? You're the little man that exists in the box?
Maybe. I've seen what you've done on the computer and I'm not happy about it. By the way.
Yeah. If you were Gee, then you would have seen me play some Super Hexagon or something. No. Actually, that's not out for the computer yet, but
nope.
Really quick, two things I want to say about Guillaume. One,
okay, 5 more things.
Yeah, I know.
And then we're done.
I can't help myself. I'm not even paying attention to the timing right now. Number one, about Guillaume, I loved his comments in the PS3 Vita thing where he says I think the best that Sony can hope for is GameCube GBA connectivity levels of success, which is absolutely, I think, true. But anyway, we already moved on from that topic. The second thing, the last thing I'm going to say before the conclusion of this podcast, folks, is I apologize for mentioning an iOS game when I tweeted to Guillaume like a week before saying that we wouldn't do that on our podcast because we talk about Nintendo games. And I didn't realize that Super Hexagon was for the iOS. I thought it was, being from the same guy as VVVV, whatever, that I thought it would be going to be, that it was going to be, you know, at the very least a PC game that was going to be on, you know, the eShop.
Sure.
I didn't realize, though, that it was an iOS-only game for a while, and then it's going to be on the PC and Mac. So, you know, I guess, a little bit of Super Mario Bros. 2 action there. I have to apologize to nobody, really. I mean, it's not like I have to apologize to Guillaume or anyone, but still, yeah, I was accidentally hypocritical, so. So I will try not to let that happen again, Guillaume, because I have an Android phone, for God's sake, so really, what do I care about iPhone games, you know?
True.
If anything, I'm going to talk about Amazing Alex on the Android phone. I'm not going to. anyway, I'm friggin' hungry. I can't even speak right now, so... what do you say we wrap this up?
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up like the Wii U games that'll be under the Christmas tree soon enough. Yeah. So that does wrap up another episode of the Negative World Podcast. You know, we'd like you to comment on all the things you've heard. Hopefully it wasn't too boring with just the two of us today. But comment on all that stuff at negativeworld.org. Just find the thread that'll be associated with this podcast. And if you don't want to do that, you can reach us to the Facebook page. You just simply search for negativeworld.org. Or you can reach us on Twitter at negative_world. But don't find my Twitter because it's full of completely erroneous hypocrisy. So I want to remind everyone to subscribe to the Enhanced podcast. And I want to mention, I swear to God, last thing I'll mention is the new comics that have been on the site lately. I've really enjoyed. There's Zero's Cloud Chasers and Plute's, well, Paul's new comic, Collector Carl, which is exciting because it kind of seems it's going to be like a long-running story with different issues. So that seems to have a lot of gaming in-jokes. So check out all the comics. There's a ton of comics on Negative World right now, and it's a great feature that Zero did, and it's a lot of fun. So, Joe, thank you for doing this with me. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Been a pleasure as always, Stephen.
Yeah, we've had a good conversation, I think. So, yeah, everyone, thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a few weeks.
See you later.